Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And welcome to Overnight America. All right. Welcome. I can't believe it's nearly Christmas. I just completed the special for Christmas night. It's now in the can. It's ready to air. And thanks to everyone that participated and shared their Christmas memories. I had fun listening back to them all. We have a very special hour planned. It's an hour where we have a guest the entire hour, which to me is very informative. I like to be able to have these long-form interviews and talk about these, what I think are pretty important topics. Everyone hears these stories in the news about hacking. They hear stories about how corporations are trying to combat some of the issues they have with cyber threats, how they have an environment they're walking into where they know they'll always be behind because there's always going to be people out there trying to find vulnerabilities and there's going to be threats of terrorism. And this is the global problem we have. It's not just here in the United States because we're international. You could be a company here in the United States and some of these threats, and maybe a lot of them, would come from overseas. So we have a guest on the line with us the entire hour. And it's a new book that's out called Corporate Security Crossroads, Responding to Terrorism, Cyber Threats, and Other Hazards in the Global Business Environment. Dr. Richard Chastey, thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Well, thank you for having me.
You're staying up late with us here, doing the entire hour. It's an interesting time, you know, 2018, 2019. We're always finding in the news something that's happened on the corporate level where there was a hack or there was some kind of a threat. You know what drives me the craziest about all of this is normally you don't find out about it till about 6 months after all of your information with that company's been stolen or something like that. And I know that there's got to be people in the corporate world that are just scared to death that they're going to be the next target, and odds are they're going to be a target at some point. So thanks for joining us this hour to talk about these things.
Sure.
Okay. So what's the focus of the book? That's where I kind of want to start, and then we can go from there.
Well, the focus of the book is on how multinational corporations and other international business enterprises can augment their security in the contemporary world, which is characterized by globalization, the technology revolution, a host of myriad threats that emanate both in the cyber world and in the traditional physical world.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm trying to do in this book is to just lay out a program for C-class executives to consider in terms of thinking about security, thinking about networking and collaboration with other multinational corporations, and in a sense developing a bulwark where some of the organizational processes don't need to be replicated. You don't have to reinvent the wheel here. Mm-hmm. You can achieve an economies of scale where you, in a collaborative efforts, work to develop organizational processes and products and services that can be shared and with collaboration jointly developed. And this can be done in a very efficient manner. In addition, thinking about multinational corporate security really requires us to think about a host of different interconnections between criminal organizations and terrorist groups, between terrorist groups that operate in the field and in virtual reality, and even disgruntled workers. You know, I develop in this book a continuum of radicalization where on one side I'm talking about apolitical threats, disgruntled workers, former vendors that might have been dismissed for a variety of reasons who have some idea of the lay of the land of an organization, all the way up on one end of the continuum to the other end of the continuum, where you have politically driven threats. These are political radicalization events and processes and people.
Yeah. You know, when you talk about disgruntled workers, I don't know if you saw that video of the Walmart worker that went up and, you know, did that little announcement inside the store and it went viral. That is fairly, you know, there's not a lot of harm in something like that, maybe a little
right.
bit of embarrassment. But
right.
what we see, even in radio stations, I've heard stories of disgruntled workers after they got let go. Back in the day when there used to be carts and things, they'd walk back into the room and erase all the commercials and songs, you know, and there's the sabotage that goes in there because they're upset for whatever happened inside of their own business. And then we go even higher and you hear these stories about how trade secrets are leaked, and there's varying levels
That's
of this
right.
sort of thing. And disgruntled workers can be a very difficult thing to work around too, because you just don't know. They have access to all of this, and then when they're let go and they're upset, you know, they could do something like that.
Well, that's right. And in the process of being terminated and then actually let go, they have a knowledge of the system. And then if they're so predisposed, they can really cause a great deal of havoc and destruction in terms of files, in terms of dissemination of personal information of other employees, about salary rates, a whole host of sensitive materials. And so you don't want to underestimate the, you know, apolitical part of the spectrum in terms of disgruntled workers or vendors that also have knowledge about how things work. And if they are predisposed to act, can act accordingly.
Yeah, I've got a couple of examples for you that I want to bring up. And I also
okay.
want to talk to you about collaboration a little bit later in the show. It's funny you
sure.
mentioned that. Companies don't, I normally think of collaboration between large companies as something that doesn't happen all that often. Normally, it's they got their own thing. They don't want to cross lines. They don't want to share information. You know, they want to be able to protect themselves, and who cares about the other people? So it's funny that you mentioned the collaboration and trying to seek help from each other. So I do want to talk about that a little bit later in the show.
Sure,
but,
sure.
One thing that you also brought up when it comes to trying to make sure you protect your company, there's some very large companies, and I understand some of them go through some pretty extreme lengths, almost like Mission Impossible, where Tom Cruise comes down from the ceiling, where there's these rooms that are isolated from the rest of the world that you physically have to be inside in order to access their internal computer system and things. So it's completely off of the internet, so there's no way that hackers from the outside can get in. It would almost have to be that sort of sabotage of a worker from the inside that would be sharing those things. Companies go through some great lengths to try to minimize some of the risks that are out there when it comes to these problems. Are you ever fully able to shake off any vulnerabilities, or really, is there no way to possibly protect yourself in a corporation?
Well, there's no way of protecting yourself 100%. And I think what happens is that people have a fixed budget, and they have to determine by means of discussion with subject matter experts what the likelihood, what the probabilities are of threats materializing. Mm-hmm. And there are always such things called black swans, unanticipated events, and what one scholar, what government official in Singapore calls black elephants, those events that you don't anticipate, but you should have anticipated.
Mm.
But what you do is you basically look at probabilities and likelihood. Now, you know, it's interesting when you talk about the Mission Impossible scenario.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of there was a watershed event a few years ago called the Stuxnet virus. And the Stuxnet virus was oriented towards Iranian centrifuges in terms of the nuclear refinement process.
Mm-hmm.
But the Stuxnet virus also made its way into other computer systems in the process. And we think that was a virus that was put together by the United States and the Israelis, but there isn't certainty about that. There could be other actors involved. The point is that there had to be, they used what were called an air gap system, and which required that there be physical contact between a thumb drive and the computer system itself for mm-hmm. this thing to be inserted. So even in that case where you have creation of a of a watershed event such as the Stuxnet virus in Iran, you still might well, in this case, have had to have had a collaborator that would actually make the physical connection between the thumb drive and the malware and and the system.
Didn't someone in Washington, D.C. try to just see if they dropped thumb drives in the parking lot, if people would pick them up and just out of curiosity stick them into a government computer? And absolutely they did. And that was just, it was that easy to try to get around that.
Yes, and that's part of a concept called social engineering. In other words, it's what happens when people who are unauthorized. One part of this social engineering situation or condition is when you have unauthorized people that are going through the facility, and people, one hand doesn't know what the other is doing in terms of you know, raising red flags over people that you don't know going through the facility. And one tactic has been to just disseminate thumb drives, and people pick them up and they say, oh, gee, you know, I don't have to go spend $10 on another one, and put it into the machine, and there you go. So, yes, I mean, that's something that you have to worry about. So that, and this brings up one of the most important themes of the book, which is that security is everybody's problem, and it's everybody's concern. And so there has to be a set of programs put into place, protocols, programs, drill rehearsals, where the people understand when confronted with a particular situation what the protocol is in terms of securing sensitive data. It could be something as simple as somebody leaving a document by the Xerox copier about salaries. You know, where do you take this? Where does it go? How do you reduce the prospect of blowback from somebody's mistake, or if it's not a mistake, something more malignant?
Yeah. Dr. Richard Chasdy joins us on Overnight America, and the book is called Corporate Security Crossroads, Responding to Terrorism, Cyber Threats, and Other Hazards in the Global Business Environment. Really, how does any company stand a chance in the way the world operates today? There's so many different threats out there. He's going to stick with us all hour long, so I want to talk about that coming up. Also, collaboration and how that can help companies, and really, just how dangerous is it out there? You know, we talk about the Mission Impossible scenario. I mean, are we at that point? We hear about President Trump talking about China and them hacking and stealing intellectual property, and there's companies here that are losing millions and billions of dollars to that. So we're going to continue our conversation with Dr. Richard Chasdy coming up next on Overnight America KMOX.
Hi, it's Debbie Monterey. Happy holidays to you and yours, and thanks for being part of our family here on KMOX.
Happy holidays from KMOX.
I love those jingles. I can't get enough of them. Welcome back to Overnight America. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. There's a book out now called Corporate Security Crossroads, Responding to Terrorism, Cyber Threats, and Other Hazards in the Global Business Environment. Author of that book, Dr. Richard Chasdy, joins us now. Thanks for coming again and staying the entire hour.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So I wanted to talk about that one scenario. It was a very popular movie in the 90s. Of course, you saw where they lower down into the secure room and he's got to steal this. And if he drops a sweat, you know, all the alarms will set off. And it was a very cinematic moment in Mission Impossible. And I wonder, are we at a point where there's those type of measures? Some companies are going through those type of measures to try to secure themselves?
Well, you know, it's hard to distinguish in some sense, but easy to distinguish Hollywood flights of fancy from fact. And I think I think people descending like spiders from the ceilings to elude these sorts of webs of security is something that is dramatic to see. But these sorts of actions have happened without a lot of that drama. You know, we've had industrial espionage continues to pose a problem. The Chinese, for example, have a jet fighter, which is a fifth generation jet fighter, which very much resembles what we have produced, and it's fairly clear that there's been some compromise of information that has led to the development of that type of quality jet fighter in such a short period of time. So we see this in terms of industrial espionage, not only from countries like China that we would consider to be at the very best competitors, rival competitors, if not outright opponents. Mm-hmm. But we see industrial espionage taking place on the part of our allies. In fact, there's a part of the book that talks a little bit about Air France and some of the difficulties that Air France has had in the past in terms of securing safety, not so much the safety, but the property rights, the intellectual property rights of individuals flying. So there have been documented cases of allies engaging in this as well. And France is not the only one.
When we had the whole issue of spying on our allies and things, you hear this every once in a while when Germany comes up and, you know, the world leaders, they all know what the other ones are talking about behind the scenes. And I think even Rand Paul would talk about this sort of thing. Is it really at the point where technology is always spying all the time and it's just waiting for something to leak out there of value?
Well, I think technology is a method. We've had the technological revolution is just the latest incarnation of a very sophisticated set of methods. But we've had historically allies spying on allies, and certainly in terms of adversaries efforts that have taken place, you know, from time immemorial. It's just that what this technological revolution that we have, which is really a structural element of our international political system, which affects three or more states. You know, you think of globalization, and you think of the end of the Cold War, and you think of the technological revolution or the technology revolution. This is something that is a real concern. And it has legal issues as well. There are legal implications of this as well. So let's say, for example, you're on an aircraft and you're sitting next to someone they engage in what's called war driving, where they're able to access in a wireless capacity nowadays information off of your laptop. Hmm. Well, where do you go for legal recourse? Is it the carrier, the aircraft? Is it the nation state behind this in terms of the aircraft? In terms of who's culpable? Is it the nationality of the individual who's been accused of pirating personal information? If you're over international waters, then what happens? Does that come into play? What the implications are for this technological revolution, in no small part, are the legal questions and legal issues that have to be sorted out. And much of this is uncharted waters. So both technologically and both jurisprudentially, I think, you have uncharted waters and applications. The other thing about the technological revolution, which I think is kind of scary, is what's called COTS, consumer off-the-shelf material, which means that you can go into any reputable computer store and buy extremely sophisticated, advanced equipment that allows you to monitor basically cherry pick, if that's what your intentions are, information or data. And so this is something, getting back to the Stuxnet virus, the Stuxnet virus was made, as I understand it, by COTS, consumer off-the-shelf materials, and employed what were called zero-day exploits. And zero-day exploits, I think, are something that we have to worry about.
All right. Yeah, well, let's save that part of it. You know, and one more question before we got to go to a break again. But I do want to get more into those zero-day exploits. You mentioned about who's held responsible. We might actually get an answer to that. I think based on the way we're learning about how Facebook has sold a lot of your private information, just voluntarily using it and profiting from information they said they would never do, probably even going against their own terms of service. I mean, there's a lot to look into there. Maybe the way we treat some of these social media and these tech companies here in the United States would be laying the groundwork for what you were saying before when it comes to how do you even tell who to sue or who to talk to in those instances.
I know. And at the same time, though, getting back to the aircraft example, if you're flying over international waters and you have the victim who's a national from one state and the alleged perpetrator who's a national of the other, and all flying on a carrier of a particular nation state, it becomes a very convoluted issue in terms of sorting out issues of primary venue and primary jurisdiction. And so these are important issues, and they're in the process of being unfolded. Answers to these questions will unfold as these processes continue. And one of the things that I think we have to think about is, of course, the component of in terms of our legal system of case law and of legal precedent is essentially critical here in terms of spelling out what in particular situations who has been found culpable and under what circumstances.
Yeah, I do want to talk about China again because you use them as an example. Maybe we'll do that when we come out of the break because we're coming up with some trade wars with China. Donald Trump, as president, said, we're losing a lot to China for this sort of thing. We know a lot of hacking comes in and there's a lot of intellectual property that's stolen. And we see that from our own military. What an interesting example. I've never heard of that one you mentioned with the aircrafts. But we're now renegotiating with them at the start of the year. I don't know if that'll be a part of it or not, but we do lose a lot. And our economy does get a hit when these large corporations lose, millions and millions of dollars in their research, and then all of their trade secrets are stolen. So I want to talk to you about that. We got to go to break. Can we do that when we come back? Yeah.
Okay.
Perfect. Dr. Richard Chasdy joins us. Corporate Security Crossroads, Responding to Terrorism, Cyber Threats, and Other Hazards in the Global Business Environment. He's with us this entire hour. We'll be right back with him coming up on Overnight America, KMOX.
Let's go Blues! Joey Vitale here, and Thursday night we got some late night hockey for you from Western Canada as the Blues make their only trip of the season to Vancouver to take on the Canucks. Catch all the action with the pregame show at 8:30 and the face-off at 9 right here on KMOX.
Let's go Blues!
And welcome back to Overnight America. This is really neat. We have a guest all hour. His new book is out called Corporate Security Crossroads, Responding to Terrorism, Cyber Threats, and Other Hazards in the Global Business Environment. Dr. Richard Chasdy, thank you again for sticking around here on Overnight America.
Oh, my pleasure.
Yeah, I wanted to talk more about how China plays a part in this. The example you gave before, that was the first time I heard that there were similarities in even military craft, and that was a pretty good tip-off that there may have been some information stolen. And when I think about the United States government, I think they have so many resources to protect themselves. How in the world does anyone else stand a chance if even our top military secrets aren't safe? So I want to talk about intellectual property and really the threat, the cyber threat that we see from the outside, and how you think this could play out when Donald Trump in the United States, along with China, try to renegotiate their trade and maybe try to, I don't know, stop some of this.
Well, all of those are great questions. I just wanted to tell you a story that I was reminded of when you were talking about this Chinese fifth-generation aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
After the Second World War, the Soviets evidently acquired a B-29 bomber developed a ripoff of the B-29 bomber to use in their inventory. So this is not a new phenomenon. Hmm. And you know, the technological revolution is a means by which you can achieve the goals. But this is something that, and I think this is why some of the classical theories that revolve around what terrorism is applies in the realm of cyber terror and cyber crime and whatnot.
Real quick before you expand
sure.
on that. So when you talk about the B-29, this isn't like an AliExpress ripoff type of deal. This is pretty legit. It seems like they implemented some of this technology. It's not just like a front and then really the insides are different.
Well, this was, as I understand in the readings, this was a very close copy of the B-29.
Okay.
And so now we're talking about, you know, something really in the immediate aftermath of the Second World War. Mm-hmm. And so this is something that is not new. But what makes it terribly frightening is the technological revolution and the globalization interconnections. All of this is important. But let's get back to trade wars, mm-hmm. and we'll talk about tariffs as you wanted to.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
So trade wars with that's right now we're on a hold. So there was a trade war there for a while, and then they announced a 90-day hold, and I think they're going to try to renegotiate at the start of the year, which could be a really big deal. If you look at us, it's funny. When we went into this trade war, we had the upper hand. China's economy was doing bad. American economy was doing strong. Now, right now, it seems like we're starting to struggle, and the Chinese economy is starting to turn around, too. So that kind of puts us at a disadvantage. But what I don't want to miss is the opportunity to try to cut down on some of this problems we have with cyber threats from China, because there seems to be a lot of that coming from the country. So I want to get your thoughts on that.
In regards to tariffs, you know, tariffs are never a good thing. Mm-hmm. They distort the economic framework of the global economy. They and tariffs really beget tariffs, mm-hmm. and the prices are usually passed on to consumers, and sometimes producers are put out of business. Or brought very close to being taken out or going belly up. I was reading an account of an American firm that was affected by the tariffs regarding aluminum, steel, and raised the prices of raw materials to the point where this producer really was very, very worried about the future of the company. Mm-hmm. So, you know, tariffs beget other tariffs, mm-hmm. and this is something that the entire international economy, as it was in the contemporary world, as it was envisioned by Roosevelt and Churchill, was a free market economy where every effort would be made to reduce or eliminate barriers to trade. And so this is a dangerous precedent. And this can, since issue areas are related in international politics, mm-hmm. and the international economic structure derives from the international political structure, this can be very dangerous.
Yeah, but they do have a point, at least. We are losing money. Corporations here that have a lot to lose when it comes to research and development, and also some of their intellectual property that is very valuable to them. That hurts, too. I mean, these companies are losing a lot of money. If you go back and look at some of these tech companies in the 2000s that don't exist anymore, a lot of times it could be rooted back to someone stealing their information.
Well, the Chinese have had lots of difficulties complying with intellectual property rights standards, they've also had problems in terms of purposeful revaluation of currency to devalue the yuan to the point where their exports become more attractive, and this is sort of a manipulation of rules and regulations, which really crosses the line. The other thing that has happened, of course, in addition to currency revaluation, mm-hmm. is that in an overwhelming number of cases, when foreign companies want to do business in China, they have to establish a joint venture or a joint partnership with a Chinese firm. Mm. And so this brings in this whole issue of to what degree will that firm require that the competitive advantage of a company, its intellectual property rights, be shared with that Chinese firm. And so it's a really dicey calculation to make. On the one hand, the Chinese market is huge, and there's the potential for great profits to be made. But the other thing is that firms that go into China really have to deal with, in an overwhelming number of cases, is a requirement that there be the sharing of certain key success factors or competitive advantage. And so that, in a sense, poses a real problem. So in addition to the intellectual property rights violations and the ripoffs, you've got these other activities which we frown upon.
Yeah, they're big into that loyalty thing. Even on an individual basis, they always want the loyalty to the government, and they always want to check up on you to make sure you're not saying anything bad about the government. That's why it only makes sense they'd extend that to the businesses and the people there to keep things friendly. Yeah, you know, there's a couple of things I do want to ask you, but we have to go to break. We have one more segment left with author Dr. Richard Chasty. The book is called Corporate Security Crossroads, Responding to Terrorism, Cyber Threats, and Other Hazards in the Global Business Environment. And maybe the bigger question is, you're a company, you're building a company up. Maybe you're a construction company. It's a little bit different than if you're a giant tech company that is developing, you know, cell phones like Samsung or something like that. But still, how does any company actually stand a chance when major corporations get hacked, when the governments get hacked? How does anyone stand a chance anymore? So I want to ask you that, and how you think corporate world should respond to some of these giant threats that are out there. Dr. Richard Chasty, will continue our conversation with him next on Overnight America KMOX.
Making the darkness of night a little brighter. It's Ryan Recker and Overnight America on KMOX.
If you're into technology like I am or cybersecurity, I read all kinds of different websites about how companies are combating this, how there's leaks over here, how there's problems over there, how the United States is handling it. Corporate Security Crossroads. You'll have to check this out from author Dr. Richard Chasty, who joins us for one more segment. Thank you again for sticking with us all hour long.
Well, again, it's my pleasure.
We look at how these major corporations and also governments, for whatever reason, they don't have a finite answer on how to combat this sort of thing. And it makes me wonder, how can anyone really defend themselves against these sort of threats? And what kind of recommendations would you make if you don't necessarily think you're a target, but if there's something of value out there, you know, people may try to target you. You never know.
Well, that's true. And I'm thinking about something that you said earlier on in our conversation. And where you pointed out where part of the problem is, I think, if the reluctance of firms to either report if they've been hacked. And I think, you know, this is firms that are smaller, that don't have the resources in order to devote to cybersecurity. They're in a catch-22 situation. If they report to the government in terms of being hacked, that becomes public information, and that's going to make stockholders, if it's a publicly owned corporation, and the board of directors, very jittery. And on the other hand, if they don't report it, nobody knows, in fact, what happened and how. And there's really a lot of confusion about how to fix the problem. So that's part of the aspect of this. And one of the things that I've recommended is a network of public-private partnerships where government begins to work very closely with different types of firms, and we can sort of start on the international plane when thinking about that, where what the firms do is that and we get back to this issue of collaboration. What they need to do, what firms need to do, is understand that security in this day and age, it should be viewed as a fixed cost.
Mm-hmm.
It should be viewed as much of as a fixed cost as would be the rent that you pay for facilities,
okay,
or the infrastructure that inside the facility.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of this is a mindset issue. But the other thing is that what firms need to do is to talk to one another. One of the things that I have I'm originally from Michigan, and one of the things that I was thinking of is that the big three should really get together and think about subsidiaries and think about, they're the original equipment manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
Think about first-tier and second-tier suppliers and how to secure those second- and first-tier suppliers in a more coordinated fashion reduce the risk of industrial espionage, which may or may not be government-driven, for example, but to talk to one another and begin to establish templates in terms of what sets of responsibilities particular firms can do best. Google would be information compilation, obviously. So public-private partnerships would work within the context of firms sharing information with other firms, information about new organizational processes with security in mind, new products in mind, so that each corporation essentially doesn't have to reinvent the wheel. So optimally, what you want to do is achieve an economies of scale where you have these different firms in an integrated set of protective layers with government in this public-private partnership, creating a type of firewall, if you will, a metaphorical or a figurative firewall that will help in terms of confronting some of the issues associated with contemporary threats to international businesses. Now, of course, some of the same thing can be done at the domestic level. But what this requires, I think, is a coordinated public-private effort. And that's something that we haven't seen. There was one event that I talk about in my book at length, which I think might be, unfortunately, a harbinger of events to come, which was the Tiguan-Turin attack. It was a gas facility in Inamenis, Algeria. And why this is important, it was a consortium. And why this is important is because you had a set of terrorists who actually were influenced by some of the cultural strains and tensions between Westerners and those from Algeria to basically make the case for attack against this facility. This took place, I think, around 2012, thereabouts 2012, 2013. But what companies have that terrorists want are resources to pay off for ransom for kidnapped personnel. They have certain high-tech processes and intellectual property that could be of value. And these are targets that have not been hardened in traditionally the way government targets and other civilian targets that have been anticipated as high risk have been. So one of the things that we also see is the importance of symbolism. So an American firm doing business in the developing world, I'm not saying they have a bullseye on their back, but they're certainly, given the historical legacy of imperialism, the problems of North-South relations, are at a point where they have to think about security seriously, which gets to another point that even when talking about cybersecurity, the technical skill to put together firewalls and similar measures is important, but a lot of the cybersecurity issue has to do with non-cybersecurity conditions, context, environmental operation context, and what groups are active in particular areas. It's part of what's called a strength, weakness, opportunity, and threat SWOT analysis that businesses do.
Yeah.
So a lot of this has to be coordinated. And that's sort of a tack that I take in this book, and I begin to flesh out what possibilities might exist for that.
You start to talk about better, stronger together. You almost sound like a politician at this point when you're advocating for this.
I'm hoping to sound more like an economist than a politician.
Probably better. Okay,
because you know, achieving economies of scale in this is incentive to do the collaborative work.
Yeah,
and I think that's something that we really want to think about is a serious set of events that will be able to produce some tailor-made measures to confront some of this.
All right, we only have about a minute left, and I have to ask you, you said you grew up in Michigan or lived in Michigan. Whereabouts?
I lived in Farmington Hills, and I lived in Grosse Pointe Woods.
Nice. I grew up in Taylor.
Did you?
Went to Central Michigan.
You went to Central Michigan. Great.
It's fun times. All right. So the book is out there. Corporate Security Crossroads: Responding to Terrorism, Cyber Threats, and Other Hazards in the Global Business Environment. It's a pretty serious subject. It's something that corporations and companies should be taking very seriously. If people want to check out the book, where can they find it?
They can find it on Amazon, and they can order it from Prager Publishers.
Ooh, very good. Corporate Security Crossroads: Responding to Terrorism, Cyber Threats, and Other Hazards in the Global Business Environment. Look it up. It's a very important topic, as you know, and it's something that if you're behind the eight ball, you better catch up real quick. Dr. Richard Chasty, thank you so much for spending the last hour here on Overnight America.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it a lot.
Oh, wow. That was an awful lot of fun. You know, it's great when we have guests that want to really explain that to everyone listening. And I know we reach, you know, 30-some states, so I'm sure there's tech experts out there thinking, I better get that book, Corporate Security Crossroads. Go check it out.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.